Today on The Grave Talks, Mother's Curse. Relationships are important. Trust in a relationship is key. In a relationship sours, most people will simply move on and the contact with a former friend will dissolve and the memories will slowly fade. What happens when one person seeks to teach a former friend a lesson about their behavior through a curse? On today's episode of The Grave Talks, we hear of just that. Two feuding mothers whose sons are good friends. When the mothers decide that they should no longer be in contact, they pull their children's contact away as well. One of the mothers goes as far as putting a demonic hex on the other in retaliation for her actions. The hex not only reaches the mother, but unintentionally the son as well. This is the story of a mother's curse, told to us by a man who was once one of the little boys in this story. Tony Ramirez.
Growing up there was actually, I love the way that I grew up there. Now, I wouldn't have chosen it for my children. I moved many years after that. I don't want them to live the same way that I grew up, but at the same time, I love the culture. I love, you know, everything about it. We grew up, really poor. So we didn't have a lot. You know, what we had was our family and our friends and, you know, but, you know, growing up there was great. I mean, I loved the people that, you know, surrounded me, my friends, and especially my friend and the family that, you know, all of this took place with. I really loved growing up next to them. They were a big part of my life.
Neighborhood friends and all that. I know you had a friend, Juan. Tell me about Juan a little bit.
Yeah, Juan, actually, in the story, I changed his name, his real name, of course, you know, I just did it sure. for his sakes. But Juan was great. I mean, you know, he was a couple of years younger than me. He was my next door neighbor. Our houses were really close to one another. They're like four houses, one bedroom houses. They're real close. And, you know, he grew up pretty much the same way I did. And I mean, it was great. He was super energetic and he was fun. And, you know, he was more like a brother, you know, than really like a friend. I mean, we used to play together, you know, we got into fights, you know, arguments over who won, you know, the different, you know, game we were playing or, you know, shoving push matches and stuff. He was a really great friend of mine. He really was. I used to take trips with him and his family to Mexico. I'm Mexican American. So basically, I wasn't born in Mexico. I was born in the United States for my mother and father. My father was actually born in Mexico. My mother was born in Texas. So I was always, Mexican Americans are, there's always a little debate of over if you're really true Mexican or not. And, you know, there's always that little tiny behind the scene argument, you know, with the Mexican culture. Oh, you're not a real Mexican. You're Mexican American. So his mom, they used to call me the little gringo because in my family, we never grew up talking Spanish at all. I learned it actually from his family and what I picked up on the streets. So his mother would always tell me, you know, you're never going to be, you know, you're not going to be my little gringo until you could talk Spanish perfectly. So they actually taught me Spanish. She preferred that I spoke Spanish when I actually visited them or I went on trips. So that was a really good blessing for me to be able to learn Spanish. But I was like another child to them. I went to different parts of Mexico, you know, Tijuana, Ensenada, San Quintín, you know, where they had family members and so forth. And it was a really great childhood in that aspect, you know, of being able to learn the Mexican culture, being a Mexican American, mm-hmm. you know, that I was.
Now, you were really close with your friend, but there was some difficulty that came in there between parents and such that kind of hurt that relationship a little bit. What happened there?
Yeah, my mom is a really, she was a very, very hard-headed person. I mean, she was really hard to get along. She would argue with somebody at a snap of a finger. She was just very, very hot-blooded, hot-tempered. And his mother was actually the same way. And every single time, you know, you get into little fights and arguments and stuff. Like, you know, me and him, we're friends, you know, 30, 40 minutes later. I mean, but our parents just used to go at it. I mean, well, our mothers used to go at it. And, I mean, boy, they used to get into some really heated arguments. I mean, I remember the one time in question, you know, they kind of started this whole, happenings. I actually had shoved him down by accident, and he kind of scraped his knee and went home, and of course told his mother. And, you know, I went home, told my mom, and, you know, he was crying and she was upset, and she goes, you know, your son's older than mine, and so forth. And we went back and forth, and I mean, they really got into it. They had little small arguments before, but they really got into it, and they just, I mean, they were slamming doors and, you know, kicking doors and, you know, slamming on windows. And I laugh now because I think back at it, you know, my mother yelling there, you know, screaming at the top of her lungs, and, you know, Juan's mother actually doing the same. And I was told never to play with them no more. You know, at that point, you know, don't talk to him. I was hurt. I mean, you know, he was like a brother of mine. And, you know, my family had some difficulties growing up and stuff, you know, with my brother and sister. They were never around. So I was kind of an only child versus, you know, having him there with us and while they were living there. And it was really hurtful to have them fight that way. And they just never got along. And that day was just really bad. And it turned into the rest of my life pretty much the way it is now.
Sure. I know a couple of weeks after that incident, you said that his family had a birthday party for his younger sister. And seeing that happen, and when you have a friend that you can't play with, being a kid looking at something across the way going on that you otherwise would have been totally involved with, that's, you know, that's anxiety provoking. That's saddening. That's heartbreaking. I remember some of that when I was a kid too, looking across the way at the neighbor's house and something had happened and I wasn't allowed to go play. And it was like, why? I want to go play. But you said that was a turning point where something odd began to happen. And it all began with the grandmother staring at your house. Tell me about that.
Yeah. We had a laundry room on the backside of the house where I was able to see the little driveway open area where, you know, we had parties and so forth. And the grandmother, I had met the grandmother some years before that in Tijuana, Mexico. They had a little family business that I actually went to on a visit. And that day she was kind of eerie. She was, I can see her out of all the people that are walking around and everybody's, you know, popping balloons, they're having fun, they're, you know, celebrating. And I could just see, you know, she stuck out. She was just staring at my house and just with this, just really, really just straight, just look of intensity. She's just staring at my house and, you know, kind of give me, you know, the heebie-jeebies, you know, I can feel my hair stand up when she was staring at the house. And I got this really ugly feeling. And of course I thought ugly to begin with. Like you said, I couldn't go outside. I couldn't play. I was always invited to the parties. I was always invited, you know, to the family gatherings and stuff. And, they had asked, you know, where's the little gringo at? You know, where's Tony at? And, the mother had told her, she goes, you know, well, you know, we had a little, you know, disagreement, you know, with the mother, and being the tight knit family that they were, she actually, she took offense to the argument and to the intensity of the argument, you know, that Juan's mother explained, you know, the slamming of the doors, the kicking of the doors, the slamming of the windows and so forth. So, at that point, she had told her, she says, okay, well, you know, we're late. This is something that I found out later that, you know, she said, well, you know, we're going to punish her. We're going to teach her a lesson. So, Juan's mother was told to, prepare a plate of food in her kitchen. And she was told to, make it with, by herself and place the food on the kitchen table and call the grandmother in. Well, when she called the grandmother in, the two cousins and the grandmother afterwards finding out that she was a bruja, which is basically a Mexican witch. And she, that's what she studied. And she was going to give my mother a little taste of her own, medicine. So they prayed over the food. They did what they did. When I pray, maybe curse over the food, be a better word. And she was told to give it to my mother, but to not let anybody else, have any food from the plate and make sure that it was given to her specifically. And that evening, she came over to the house and when she knocked on the door, I was sitting in the living room and I was so surprised to see her. And she had this big smile on her face. And, like everything was fine. And she told my mom, she goes, "Hey, I just want to, kind of apologize, for what happened. And, I brought you this plate of food, And I was like, "Ooh, wow, food, mm-hmm. I always loved their food because it was always so fresh. It was, prepared authentically. She goes, no, "This is only for your mother." She says, I put chili on it. She knew I didn't like chili. Mm-hmm. And she goes, I put chili on it. So it's just for your mom, I was like, okay. So my mom, she went and she was happy to see that everything was going to be, fine. And, she ate the food and she, put the plate in the sink. And then, from there on, we went to bed. Later on, as I said in the story, that actual night, being the sneaky little guy that I was, my mom fell right to sleep. I went and I actually ate from that plate. I actually ate some of the beans that were on there. Which was the turn of events was, me absorbing or, having that part of that curse attached to me, which was the turning point of everything that happened.
Now, what exactly were some of those things that began to occur with both your mom and yourself after consuming that food? What were some of the first things you noticed as time went on?
Well, my mom immediately said the next day, it was just a different vibe in the house. It really didn't start with me right away. It maybe took, a little bit longer, I would say, if that's the right words for it, to actually start happening to me. But immediately that next day, I can, my mom and my sister, they're kind of, sitting back. And my mom was, she was holding up her T-shirt and showing my sister her stomach, which later on I found out she was showing her belly button. And that next morning, her belly button started bleeding. And just out of nowhere, she thought she had maybe cut herself or maybe scratch herself, in a way to kind of, produce the blood. But every time she showed it to my sister, there was nothing, nothing there. And my sister got to a point where she was like, "Mom, stop playing. I know you're trying to trick me," and so forth. And it got to a point where my mother was getting very upset, to where no one else can see this but other than herself. And she's like, "Look, it just stopped bleeding. Look at it. And there's just nothing there." Almost as if she was the only one seeing it.
Yeah.
One night, she actually woke me up, and she real briefly, she shook me really hard in bed. And she said, look, she had this little tiny flashlight. She said, look, it's there. Could you see it? Could you see that?" And I'm like, what am I seeing? And this was before I knew that it was actually blood that she was seeing. She's like, "Do you see the blood? Do you see the blood?" And she was so intense and she was so, adamant that, that this blood was there. And she was yanking at my neck and she was like pulling at me saying, look, do you see it? Do you see it? Like, she was angry that I just couldn't see this. Almost as if it was there, and I just wasn't seeing it at the same time. And I got scared. I was 9 years old. I mean, I started crying, and she's like, okay, you know, I'm sorry. You know, and I'm like, I don't see nothing, you know. And we just, you know, I fell asleep in her arms that night. I was just, I was not scared because of what was happening, just scared that of her aggressiveness, of her just determination of me trying to see this thing. She was scaring me because of that, you know. Well, she went to the doctor. I mean, because she's like, you know what, there's really something wrong. So she went to the doctor. I went to her that day. Of course, I was nine. I had to go. I sat in the waiting room for hours and hours and hours. You know, we walked out, and she was upset. And, you know, we got in the car and went home. Later on, finding out that, you know, the doctor had even, I guess there's a way you could pull your belly button out, or there's a way to check inside there, and they said there was nothing. You know, there was no abrasions, there was no cuts, there was nothing, and there was no reason for her belly button to be bleeding. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of nights later, I actually was when things started happening with me, when they started the first occurrence, I had to go to the restroom real bad, and I had woken up, and I had never felt it before, but I felt really, really uneasy. I kind of felt like someone was just kind of staring at me. I was really scared. I never felt like that before. I mean, I used to walk to the restroom in the dark, and I mean, you know, turn on the light and, you know, be in the living room in the dark, and, you know, just, but this night I was really scared. I woke up really anxious, and so my mom was asleep. So I woke up my brother. He was in the top bunk. We actually had bunk beds in a single room, and we all slept in the same room. So I woke my brother, and he's like, what do you want? I'm like, oh, well, I got to go to the restroom. He goes, well, go, you know, why are you telling me? You're 9 years old, you know? I said, man, I'm scared, you know, can you come with me? He goes, no, I'm not going with you to the restroom. Literally, the restroom was, I mean, probably 7-10 feet away. That's how small our house was. And, you know, I bugged him enough to where he scooted to the end of the bed to where he can actually see the restroom, and I can see him. He's like, go. So I walk over to the restroom, and as soon as I open up the door, our restroom, to give you a visual of it, it actually had a toilet and a bathtub. No sink, no nothing else. So, I mean, this thing was probably 4 feet by 3 feet. That's how big it was. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I opened up the door and turn on the light, there's my brother. He was actually sitting inside the bathtub wearing the same thing that he was wearing, lying facing the door, and just with this evil look on his face, just this eerie, not evil, just eerie, just weird, an expression I had never seen him make before, kind of like a joker, like a, you know, like a just an eerie look.
Sure.
I couldn't look back. I was frozen. That's how scared I was. I was just frozen in fear until finally I just let out a scream, and I was just like, you know, mom. And I mean, just like the end of a scream came out, and she ran over there, and like he jumped off the bed, and you know, I'm like, you know, Johnny, my brother said he, you know, he's sitting in the tub. And And my mom, you know, she smacks my brother. She says, what are you doing? Why are you trying to scare him? You know, and he's like, I was looking at him the whole time. There's nothing there. I mean, I can see him. Mom, there's nothing there, you know. So, and I used to sleepwalk periodically. And, you know, my mom's like, wow, you were probably sleepwalking. You thought you saw something. You probably got woken up. You were dreaming, whatever the case was. But my brother had been woken up. My brother was on the bed. He was looking at me. You know, I was articulate enough if I was sleepwalking, which I don't think I was, because I remember, you know, I can remember every detail of it. And so that was the first occurrence that I had.
Let me ask you about that. Now, just so I fully understand, was your brother actually in the tub, or were you just seeing something that looked like your brother in the tub?
I was seeing something that looked like my brother in the tub. He was not in the tub at all, because there was no way for him to pass me up, you know, or run to the tub before I got in there. Mm-hmm. I had looked back maybe two or three times because of the uneasiness I felt to make sure that he was actually sitting on the top of the bunk bed watching me as I actually went to the restroom. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're talking 10 feet max, you know, between that room and the actual bathroom. That's how small our little kitchen area before you got to the bathroom was. So, I mean, you can call it doppelganger. You can call it spirit. You can call it, you know, whatever it was later on. Now, these words I know now, doppelganger, you know, spirit and different stuff like that, I learned later in life, but I didn't know back then. But I was just, it was him. I mean, it was him sitting in the tub with this eerie look on his face. And I know that it wasn't him, but it was him to me. And there was no way that he could have got past me to actually play that trick on me.
At this point in the story, before things escalate and your mom starts calling people, what's going through your guys' mind? Were you aware of what your mom was thinking at the time? What were you thinking at the time? You both are clearly, you're seeing things that to the rest of the world are not there, but are very, very real to you. Your mom with the belly button and the blood, and you looking into the bathtub and seeing what looks like your brother there. How is your mind processing all this at that moment?
It up until that point, there was some other occurrences that actually happened after that that kind of made it a little bit more intense. You know, now my mother's belly button, I mean, she later on, you know, kind of ruled that out to be, well, maybe it was just, you know, my imagination. Me seeing my brother in the tub was actually a little bit more. So what was going through my head or her head at that point, I'm not really sure. I mean, to tell you the truth, I mean, it was more of, is this really happening? Is this not happening? Is this, it was scary, but it hadn't intensified to the point at that time to where, you know, we were, what's really happening? It was kind of surreal. I mean, you know, how do you process it? You know, all these things are happening. We have things going on in the family, you know, things with my brother and my sister. I mean, you know, we didn't have means, you know, to pretty much pay the bills. So at that point, I mean, we didn't know what to do. We didn't know where to turn. I mean, and that's when we actually went to the church when things started getting real bad, and seeking advice from them there.
So when your mom contacted the church, how did the conversation go?
Well, I didn't hear the actual conversation, but I was there when we went for the blessing. And so basically when we went there, you know, she told them what we feel. You know, there's some occurrences that have happened in the home. We feel that, you know, we need a blessing. We need, you know, we would like to be, I don't even know the word to say, just, you know, kind of, you know, a little bit of help. There's some occurrences that have happened. Can you help us? I mean, so at that point, we went to the church, we did a blessing there. And they had told us to, you know, at home to put up these jars or cups of water next to these candles that they had given us. You know, the really tall candles, like the communion candles, the ones you go to church and light for blessings. They, you know, told us to take those home, put those up, and put a cup of water, because a cup of water would bring, it'll cleanse the room, you know, the glow of the water, you know, with the actual blessed candles. So that's what we did. And then at some point, the things felt a little bit better in the home, but it didn't stop everything from happening. Things continue to happen from that point.
I know you had written about waking up again, being very scared and feeling like someone was watching over you in the bunk beds, and experiencing what seemed like a black mass of smoke or a shadow. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Yes, by all means. when I woke up that night, I had the same uneasiness, you know, the same feeling that I got when I see my brother in the tub. And, you know, through my bunk bed, I can actually, I slept on the bottom, looking out through the actual frame of the, you know, the upper to lower bunk bed. I could see directly into the kitchen. And I can see this black mass, just this smoky type, just black, not a, you know, pronounced figure, just like a black smoke, big mass there. And I felt that freeze again. I felt that just unable to talk and just kind of frozen feeling, and just ugly, just kind of pinned to my bed type feeling. And I try to mumble out, you know, to tell my mom, hey, you know, mom, you know, I'm seeing this. At the same time, I can hear muffling, and I can hear my mom shuffling in her bed at the same time. I couldn't get over, I couldn't turn. I was just frozen with fear, to where my mom, probably within minute, maybe seconds after that, I could hear like the end of like this really loud scream, like she was holding this scream. And later on, I find out that she was, you know, she told me the story of her sight that night, where she was actually pinned to the bed, and she had this what she called black figure, but it wasn't a figure. It was the same thing that I was looking at. There was two in the room. There had to be two in the room. One was either gonna, you know, come do the same thing to me, but the other one was on my mother, had her pinned on the bed. She couldn't scream. She felt like her mouth and her face was being covered and suffocated, until finally she was able to break away and actually scream, you know, at that point. And then that's when she got up and she grabbed me and she pulled me into the room, into the living room, where we had the big a big bowl of water with three of the candles surrounding it. And when she grabbed me, you know, she was talking to somebody. She had somebody that she was physically talking to, and she just screamed at the top of her lungs, you know, leave us alone, you know, get the F out of the room, you know, get the F out of here, you know, leave us alone, leave us alone. And I had seen what I saw, but I wasn't physically touched. So she was reacting from what I would think, what I thought at that point, was from an intruder, from a person that physically touched her, physically harmed her. That's the way she was talking, to an actual person. And I can see these black masses inside the bedroom. Like I said, the house was very small. So we had living room, bedroom, kitchen, bathroom, little laundry room. So I can see, I mean, we're talking 10 feet from where I was, where she drugged me, took me over to the couch by these candles and hugged me, covered my ears, and I could hear her screaming, and I can see these black masses just like kind of just, it's kind of almost that they were just kind of like trying to come in the room, but that light was just bouncing them back off, just preventing them from coming in the actual living room, because there was this really big, you know, purple, bluish glow from this water flickering through the lights, flickering through the actual water. So I mean that held them off. I mean, and I know it did, because I saw it. Mm-hmm. That next morning, after everything, I mean, we slept in the living room. I mean, I was terrified. I was shaking. She's screaming. She's crying. I mean, my head's on her chest, and I could feel her breathing hard. I could hear her heart pounding. And I mean, we fell asleep. Next morning, you know, she tells me, she says, "You're going to your Aunt Rachel's house," which was my brother's, my dad's sister. And she says, "You know, you're going to go stay." And I was relieved. I mean, because things had started, you know, they were escalating. At that point, that's when we really started getting scared. You know, we actually physically saw, my mother was actually physically touched. I did not know that she was touched, or that she was, you know, physically assaulted by whatever this was, until way later on in my late teen, you know, early 20 years, when we actually started really talking about it, about, you know, about physical things that actually really happened to her. And there was a lot of other things that happened to her also. When I was at my Aunt Rachel's house, my Aunt Rachel, she came to pick me up that following, you know, a couple of days later. And I actually, before I left, there was a really big rainstorm. I'll get back to my mom right now, but there was a really big rainstorm that actually, you know, it came over and, you know, really loud lightning, big thunder. And I was never really scared of thunderstorms and stuff, but I used to like to look out the window, you know, see the lightning and see how it lit everything up and hear the thunder. And that night, I actually looked out my window. There was, you know, the thunder was really close and lightning was real, and lightning thunder just within a few seconds. So it was like right over the house. And I looked out when a big, you know, thunderclap had happened. And I saw what appeared to me was a lady standing on top of Juan's roof and kind of, you know, just standing there with her arms kind of up, you know, just either singing, praying, or, you know, and a big flash of light hit when I saw her, and then a real loud clap of thunder. And I mean, that thunder was, it shook the house so bad. It kind of backed me off the window. So I went to go look out again, and she was gone. Well, the next morning, I was getting ready for my Aunt Rachel to come and pick me up. And we had a dog. His name was Bullet. He had passed away several years before, but we had him chained up to this metal clotheslines with a metal chain. And every time he wanted to play and stuff, he would always, you know, rattle the chain or, you know, bark, or, you know, we would take him out and, you know, walk him, you know, play with him. And I heard his chain just real lightly. I can hear the chain kind of moving around. I was like, wow, wait, okay, who's out there with, you know, who's out there playing with the chain? Mm-hmm. So I walk out there, and my next door neighbor, which was a real good family friend of ours as well, she was a little bit older than me, she was out there, and she, you know, she was separated by this wall and like a chain link fence. And I was like, hey, who's playing with Bullet's chain? And she goes, I was going to ask you the same thing. She says, I thought you guys were taking it down or playing with it or something. She says, I was standing in my backyard really not doing nothing, so I just walked over. And I said, no. She says, yeah, I heard it too. And so we got to talking, and she's like, hey, do you remember the thunderstorm last night? I said, yeah, that was pretty loud. It was pretty crazy. She said, do you remember when that really loud thunder hit? And I looked at her, and I was just like, why? She goes, well, you know, she says, well, like, I don't want to scare you, you know, but, you know, just, when I looked out, you know, I seen a lady on top of your roof. I said, on top of my roof? She goes, yeah, there was a lady. She was, you know, her hair was, you know, in the wind, and she was kind of, you know, like, she had her hands up. And I was like, okay. And she goes, yeah. And then, you know, the lightning came and the thunder, and then, you know, she says she was gone. We always used to kind of scare each other, you know, play with each other. And if I would not have seen what I saw, I would have thought she was playing with me. And I didn't want to let her know, because it really, really scared me. Everything already had started escalating. Now we're seeing people on top of my roof, and I saw what was probably the same lady on Juan's roof. Mm-hmm. So apparently she jumped from Juan's roof over to mine and was doing whatever she was doing. But now the next door neighbor saw it. So that's the, okay, it's real. You know, things are going on. Things are happening. Now other people are starting to see it. So I called her a liar. I don't want to let her know, you know, what was going on. I didn't even want to have the discussion, because it just really scared me. I was getting ready to leave, ready to go to Matt Rachel's. I just wanted no part of this at all anymore. So I just called her a liar, and she was like, okay, she blew it off, but she didn't want to push. You know, you can tell she didn't want to push. She didn't want to scare me any more than what I looked like I was scared, or, you know, what she saw. You know, because I'm pretty sure that she saw that, you know, that deer in the headlight, just, you know, that look for me. I'm pretty sure she did. Yeah, and then my Aunt Rachel came to pick me up, And I went to go stay with her for the better part of the summer.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Tony Ramirez about a mother's curse. In part two of our interview, we'll find out, did the dark entity follow Tony to his aunt's house as he tried to escape the power of his mother's curse? What did Tony see through the window during a shocking flash of lightning? What did Tony's mother see in their home when she spent the summer alone there? What did the local priest feel was haunting the house? And how does Tony's mom get the curse lifted from her, her family, and the home? All of that and more in part two of our interview. To get it, become a Gravekeeper. That is a supporter of our program. Go to patreon.com/thegravetalks for $5 a month. You'll get access to part two of this episode and every single episode that we have ever made. You'll also get advanced access to our episodes months before they go public. So if you're looking for more episodes to listen to, that's the place to go. There are many episodes just waiting for you to binge away on. Full episodes, part one and part two, when you become a Gravekeeper. Patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to our website, thegravetalks.com, and click Become a Gravekeeper. Your support is what keeps this show on the air. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.